give us that inch, that bump stock ban, we will take a mile.
Just really brainwash people into thinking about guns in a vastly different way.
Good morning and welcome into this Tuesday edition of the Daily Perspective Podcast. Mark Congleton here, your sometimes humble host for this hour of observation, insight, and absurdity. And I hope you're having a good day, wherever or whenever you may be listening to the podcast. Thanks for being there. It is Tuesday, the 21st day of January, 2020. As we go diving into the issues that occurred over the last 24 hours in our society. And it was an interesting day yesterday. And it will be an interesting day today as this day moves forward. Because the impeachment trial gets underway today. The dog and pony show insisted upon by the Democrats in the House of Representatives gets underway today. And yesterday, there was a huge pro-Second Amendment rally in Virginia. And the mainstream press just lied about what happened there yesterday. It was really sad to see, but really no big surprise. We'll dig into that coming up in just a bit. We'll talk about other things as well. Yesterday was one of those days where there were just a couple of great big stories that occupied everything. And we'll see if we can stray off into little side roads from time to time today. We'll do our best. Okay? All right. I don't know how your day was yesterday, but mine was rather uneventful. At one point, I got to be honest with you, the studio dog, Kimber the Wonder Dog, was so bored she had to go for a ride. So we did that yesterday. Listen, when you look at everything and all you're seeing is the same two stories popping up, and it's really too cold to get anything done in the great outdoors, and you're really caught up on everything, and you really, a big part of you just doesn't want to manufacture new work, you go play. And so pretty much that's what we did yesterday. Kimber the Wonder Dog and I went for a ride, and we went out and topped off the tank in the vehicle, got some new wiper blades, and that was the excitement of our day. I'm telling you. That's kind of, part of that is in preparation for what's happening today, because today is going to be a busy, busy, busy day that I knew there would be no time for me to go do those two things. So I went and got those things done yesterday. So today I will make up for yesterday's thumb twiddling. And when I say thumb twiddling, I mean getting lost in YouTube, because that's kind of what I did yesterday. I sort of got lost in YouTube. Am I the only person this happens to? I just got to know. I can't be the only person this happens to. This has to be YouTube's business model when I think about it, because you don't go to YouTube intending to watch videos about cats growing geraniums, but eventually you end up there and you find that there are millions of those videos, and you find yourself in this little twilight zone of video world where you're watching video after video after video on the same topic until you finally shake yourself back into reality and say, I need a hobby. You know, because it's just crazy. It's okay. For example, yesterday, little old me, I found this video channel called Strange Parts. And the reason I stumbled across this video channel is because I have been watching a lot of Adam Savage's videos on YouTube when I have spare moments here and there. Adam Savage, you remember him from Mythbusters. Remember that TV show on Discovery? Adam Savage was the guy with the big horn rim glasses and the kind of reddish blonde hair. Not the walrus, Jamie. Not Jamie. Adam. the other guy, the guy who blew his eyebrows off on that one Mythbuster episode. Yeah, that guy. Well, he's staying busy. He's got a Mythbusters Junior show that he's had on. I don't know if it made it to another season, but he did start that. He at one time was touring, taking a show on the road where he would take Q&A from the audience and they would do something interesting things on the stage and the like. And he actually does work. He does have what you and I would call a day job. But that day job has kind of transmogrified into being on YouTube all the time. And it seems to me that Adam Savage is just a kid that never grew up. He's that kid who loved to build models and who loved Japanese anime and loved playing video games and loved all this other stuff. And now he is an adult and he's found a way to turn building models and enjoying all of that stuff into making a living. And he did so by being a model builder for the movie industry. You're right. So he worked for Industrial Light and Magic for a while, George Lucas's company, building models. He was responsible for some of the things you saw on screen in episode 2 of the Star Wars prequels and other films. He's involved in some other things as well. You remember the movie Space Cowboys? Yeah, that movie. He was involved in building the miniatures of the lunar module and other things for Space Cowboys. That's just a couple of examples of what he's done. He's also been commissioned to create mock-ups for toys that would be pitched to toy companies. Somebody has an idea for a cool-looking spacecraft toy, and they would hire him to build the original model that would be used in the pitch meetings going to the toy company. And then once that model was built and they if they wanted any refinements, he would work on all of the detail work and get it to the point where they could take what he had made to a factory to be copied. So basically what he's done is he has taken his model building skills and his enthusiasm for building models and things like that and made a living. God bless America. And that's what he has done. And he kind of parlayed that into fame by getting involved with Jamie Hyneman on Mythbusters. And on Mythbusters, actually, it was Jamie, if I understand correctly, it was Jamie that pitched Mythbusters to Discovery. But Discovery didn't think Jamie was interesting enough. He was too, there's no other way to put it. He was too dull. But when he partnered with Adam Savage, who was a bit over the top and a bit crazy, he had also had some acting background. The show had enough appeal, and they got on, and over the years, I guess you say the rest is history. Acting background. Yeah, he's had a couple of small roles. One of them was in a Charmin commercial with Mr. Whipple, believe it or not. I don't know if you remember those days. At any rate, I got into watching his videos because some of his stuff is interesting. And I find myself watching his videos and shaking my head, thinking this guy is just a kid who is however many years he is old now. He's grown up, he's married, he's got a house, he's got a job, his net worth is about $8.5 million right now, and he just enjoys playing all the time. And his videos, specifically his one-day build videos, are just him in his workshop building toys. Now, those toys may be duplicates of spacesuits, because he's got this thing about spacesuits. And he has built duplicates of everything from the Mercury spacesuit forward and then copies of movie spacesuits from sci-fi films. And he's done all kinds of stuff like that. And it's just, yeah, he's done that. He's got a podcast. It's sort of a roundtable discussion about things. There have been offshoots of what he's done, and other people are now involved. He's basically got a little cottage industry that's all centered around being a grown-up kid. It's just amazing to me. Well, that is what, because of watching those, YouTube suggests other things like that. And you've probably seen it if you've spent any time around YouTube. There will be a category that says, people who watch this also watch this. And that's how I stumbled up on the guy with strange parts. His name is Scotty. Scotty's last name completely escapes me. I think I may have heard it once in the dozen or so videos of his I've watched. What this guy does is he goes places and explores how things are made, which is kind of interesting. He's gone to factories and demonstrated how, like, cell phones are made, how cell phone batteries are made, and things like that. And the one video that got him basically the viral attention that pushed him over the top, he has about 2 million subscribers now, was, I believe, the one where he built his own iPhone from scratch, from parts that he bought in a market in Shenzhen, China. That's in Hong Kong. It's a district of Hong Kong. And there are these wholesale markets where you can go in and buy parts, new and used, original and fake. You can buy all these parts to all kinds of things. You can buy them as in a wholesale lots, but he goes in and he bargains and he'll buy one or two or three. He said, give me five of them because I know I'm going to mess some stuff up. But he will buy the parts, take them back to his apartment. And when I say apartment, public restroom. I mean, it is so small. My wife and I have been on cruises with larger staterooms than his apartment. It's tiny, but it's his YouTube studio. And he sits down and he takes the parts and he has cameras rolling and he just builds the phone or whatever he's working on. And because I'm a tech geek, I got sucked in and I found myself watching video after video. And the next thing you know, it's the end of the day. So that's been yesterday, I spent a great deal of time watching that guy. And this morning before I left to come to the studio, I had one of his videos paused, ready to roll, but didn't have time to watch it. And when I get through with this day, this crazy day that's going to have me running all over town, I will probably come back and watch that video. And it's the one about him building the iPhone. I've actually never seen that one. And having watched his other ones, it's like, well, doggone it, now I got to watch that one because I want to see how he did this. Now, I have been into iPhones. I've done this a couple of times myself where I've replaced the batteries in iPhones, and it's really not that complex. It is fiddly, and it does require that you pay very close attention to instructions, but there are instructions online for how to do that. You can go to ifixit.com. It's all right there. I have also replaced the battery in an Apple Watch, which is super fiddly because everything is so tiny, but it is doable. And so I think that's why this kind of stuff interests me, because I've actually had my hands inside of these products and actually done a little bit of work. And then I watch him and I just sit there and shake my head. Wow, there's no way. No. He just went out and bought a $200 Whatsit so he could work on a phone. And he just spent this much money on this and that, and now at the end of it, he's going to tell me he spent $80 just for the parts for a phone that would have cost him $800 to buy from Apple at the Apple store. But he doesn't include the cost of all of the gizmos and gadgets he had to buy for testing and all the other stuff. Anyway, but that's how I got sucked in. Anyway, that's just me. Is it just me? Or do you find that too? Have you found yourself sucked in? Do you believe that's YouTube's business model is cat videos? And then you suddenly later in the day you realize, wow, I've spent 4 hours watching cat videos. Is that how YouTube stays alive? Because you have to let the ads run. You know, there are some of them that you can click and skip, but then after a while they say, no, you've got to watch the ads. And so the next thing you know, you're watching 4 hours of cat videos, cats crocheting bird cages or whatever. You know, you watch all these videos. Oh, there's another one. And you're watching the ads. It's got to be the business model. It has to be. YouTube has to have this business model so that they know they're going to suck you in. It doesn't matter what your subject is. You're a Disney nut? Then odds are you have been trapped. You have been sucked into watching YouTube videos of like Tim and Jen, the trackers, and people like that who spend their, you know, they spend their days. By the way, that couple, I think I've talked about them before. Those guys, they used to both have real jobs. And now all they do is go to the theme parks and tourist attractions around Orlando and shoot video. That's what Tim does every day. He carries a camera in and he just walks around and shoots video. Like the most recent one, the latest snacks available at this festival that's happening at Epcot. That's not the most recent, but that's the kind of stuff he does. Yeah, I am jealous.
Release the hounds!
Welcome back to the Daily Perspective. Wow, what was up with that first segment? I would call that a stream of consciousness, but was I conscious? I don't know. Usually in the first segment, I kind of focus on absurdity, and that was just the absurdity of how life has been lately. Just lost in YouTube. Oh, man. Here's something else that was absurd. Governor Ralph Northam of Virginia posted to Twitter, "We are all thankful that today passed without incident. The teams successfully de-escalated what could have been a volatile situation. I will continue to listen to the voices of Virginians and will do everything in my power to keep our Commonwealth safe." Wow. Wow. Someone responded, a guy named Brandon Moore said, "You are so full of bleep, I can smell you from Texas." And I think he's right. I won't use his language, but he's right. The day passed without incident because those who attended had no intention of being violent. There was one person, a single sole individual, who was arrested by the police. And that person was arrested because she refused to remove a mask she was wearing. And there have been those who have posted online who said, "We don't know who this person is. They weren't with us." So there was someone there who intended to cause some trouble. But they weren't involved with the pro-Second Amendment people in any substantive way. And Ralph Northam, the governor of Virginia, is taking credit for it being peaceful. This should serve as an example to all of us that these progressive politicians are bald-faced liars. And the only way they can achieve any forward movement in what they plan to do is to lie. This is a lie. There was no de-escalation. This was a peaceful protest from the beginning. 22,000 people showed up in Virginia carrying firearms publicly and signs. And afterwards, it was cleaner than when they got there because they walked around, many of them, with trash bags and cleaned up after themselves. And Governor Ralph Northam of Virginia lies and says his teams de-escalated what could have been a volatile situation. It was never going to be a volatile situation. It never was. But this man, Mr. Governor Blackface, let's kill the babies Northam, lies. Absolutely lies. And that, in my book, is absurd to the offensive degree. Here's something else that's absurd. The city of San Antonio, they have spent more than $300,000 in their effort to prevent Chick-fil-A from opening a restaurant in their airport because of the company's alleged legacy of anti-LGBTQ behavior. That's according to KENS-TV. Since the city council voted to exclude Chick-fil-A from airport plans last March, the city's been hit with two lawsuits and an investigation by the state's attorney general. In response to the original decision to ban Chick-fil-A, Texas lawmakers passed a Save Chick-fil-A law, which prohibits government entities from taking adverse actions against businesses or individuals because of their religious beliefs or moral convictions. Texas Governor Greg Abbott, in addition to signing the Save Chick-fil-A bill, supported State Attorney General Ken Paxton in opening an investigation into potential religious discrimination by the San Antonio City Council. Paxton wrote in a letter to the council, "The Constitution's protection of religious liberty is somehow even better than Chick-fil-A's chicken. Unfortunately, I have serious concerns that both are under assault at the San Antonio airport." At issue, of course, is Chick-fil-A's Christian principles, which led it to donate to organizations that are deemed by some to be anti-LGBTQ, such as the Salvation Army or the Fellowship of Christian Athletes. Chick-fil-A recently ended its support for the groups in question, sparking criticism from supporters that the company was caving in to liberal demands and abandoning Christian organizations. CEO Dan Cathy later expressed regret that the move was interpreted as discrediting Christian organizations and claimed that the company was not abandoning its long-held values. He wrote in a letter, "We understand how some thought we were abandoning our long-standing support of faith-based organizations. We inadvertently discredited several outstanding organizations that have effectively served communities for years. Some also questioned if our commitment to our corporate purpose was waning. Let me state unequivocally, it is not." $300,000 the city of San Antonio, Texas, has spent trying to keep Chick-fil-A out of their airport. You want to talk about delusional, wacko, crazy? You want to talk about, oh gosh. They are being everything they're accusing Chick-fil-A of being. When you really think about it, they're being discriminatory and very anti-something. And this has been going on for close to 8 years now. As I've said before, it is neither normal nor healthy to hold this kind of a grudge, this kind of hatred, for so long. And it is evidence that those who do have issues which need attention. These people who have such a hatred for Chick-fil-A, these people, they need some help. These people, they need some serious counseling. God love them. Bless their hearts. Oh, man. And that also is a little slice of absurdity. Now, moving forward, Mitch McConnell has released the proposed rules for the Senate impeachment trial. And as you can expect, there will be much weeping, gnashing of teeth, wailing, and moaning from the Democrats. It's already started. Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell has released a 4-page resolution laying out proposed ground rules for the upper chamber's impeachment trial of President Donald Trump, and Democrats immediately lashed out against the measure. The Associated Press reported yesterday that the trial rules and schedule set forth by McConnell indicates the Republican leader is proposing a swift impeachment trial in the Senate. Under McConnell's resolution, opening arguments would begin tomorrow on Wednesday, and then the prosecution and defense would each be granted 24 hours to present their respective cases. After that, 16 hours will be allotted for senators to question both sides, and then another 4 hours will be set aside for lawmakers to debate. Citing unnamed GOP officials, the Washington Post reported that the Senate trial, quote, won't automatically admit evidence from the House process, end quote, and pointed out that, quote, though the material will be printed and made available to senators, it won't be automatically admissible unless a majority of senators approve it, end quote. NBC News noted that McConnell's resolution makes no mention of a motion to dismiss the case, though it leaves the door open for motions to be made by Wednesday morning. The upper chamber will vote on McConnell's resolution today. Soon after the majority leader released his proposed ground rules, Senate Majority Leader Chuck Schumer released a statement slamming McConnell's resolution Monday night, calling it a deeply unfair proposal and promising to offer amendments to the measure. Schumer argued that the rules proposed by McConnell were dramatically different than the Senate rules during the impeachment of President Bill Clinton. They're not. And accused the Senate Majority Leader of being, quote, hell-bent on making it much more difficult to get witnesses and documents and intent on rushing the trial through. House Speaker Nancy Pelosi delayed sending these two articles of impeachment over to the Senate for weeks after they were passed, arguing that she was waiting for fair rules from McConnell. Let's go back and remember something here, and that is that the House rushed. Rush, rush, rush. Fast, fast, fast. Quick, quick, quick. Urgent, urgent, urgent. It's imperative that we get this done, and we get it done fast. It's so important. It's so urgent. But when McConnell, presiding over the Senate, determines rules which will move things along briskly there, then the Democrats have an issue. As far as witnesses are concerned, they had the opportunity in the House and denied those opportunities as each one arose. It's going to be interesting to see how this all plays out, but as usual, you can count on one thing being true, and that is that whenever you see a Democrat in the news media talking about what's going on, you can pretty much bet they're not telling the truth. Oh, let's just cut through the fuzz. You can bet they're lying. Coming up next, we'll take a look at 8 things you need to know about the impeachment process. That's when the Daily Perspective continues.
Hello.
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 Hello. Hello. Hello.
Hello. Oh, hello. Welcome back to the Daily Perspective. It's the Tuesday edition of the podcast, January 21st, 2020. Oh, man. I'm skimming through social media, looking at things. I just shared something to the Facebook page, and I think you ought to go look at it if you haven't. If you haven't yet. Depending on where you listen and how you listen, it happened either just now or early this morning. One of the two. And it's one of those just facts things. And the question is, I just clicked it. Here we go. How many material falsehoods and omissions did the Obama administration make when applying for warrants to surveil people associated with the Trump campaign? How many material falsehoods and omissions did the Obama administration make when applying for warrants to surveil people associated with the Trump campaign? Was it none? 1 to 10? Or more than 10? The correct answer is more than 10. As detailed in a December 2019 report by the Inspector General of the U.S. Department of Justice, quote, we identified at least 17 significant errors or omissions in the Carter Page FISA applications and many additional errors in the Woods procedures. The Inspector General is Obama's appointee, Michael Horowitz, and Page was a foreign policy advisor to the Trump campaign. FISA stands for the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Act, and the Woods procedures require that every factual assertion in a FISA application be verified. The report also states, quote, while we did not find documentary or testimonial evidence of intentional misconduct on the part of the FBI case agents or who assisted the Obama administration in preparing the warrant applications, we also did not receive satisfactory explanations for the errors or problems we identified. And, of course, federal investigations into these matters are ongoing. You remember that this all centered around the FISA process and the application to surveil the Trump campaign. And part of that involved a great deal of omission, intentional deception, errors, whatever. They called them errors. There are 17 of these things, and they all favor the opposition to the president, then they're not errors. Not at all. Not at all. Before the break, I said that we were going to look at these 8 things you need to know. There's an article on the Daily Signal. It was also on Heritage. It's been in a handful of places. but I want to run through this. I'm just gonna dive into this, and we'll see if we can get it done in this one segment. If not, we'll just bridge over to the next, okay? The House of Representatives has chosen members to participate in the Senate impeachment trial of President Donald Trump, and they've presented the articles of impeachment to the Senate. This is only the third impeachment trial of a president in our nation's history, with the others occurring in 1868 for Andrew Johnson and 1999 for Bill Clinton. Here are eight things you need to know as the Senate prepares to begin Trump's impeachment trial. Number one, when will the trial begin and how long will it last? Senate President pro tempore Charles Grassley, the Republican of Ohio, administered the oath Thursday to Chief Justice John Roberts, who will preside over the trial. Roberts, in turn, administered the oath to all senators. Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell, the Republican of Kentucky, announced that the trial itself will begin at 1 p.m. Tuesday. That's today. The Clinton impeachment took 5 weeks, and Johnson's lasted 11 weeks. The Senate's impeachment trial rules, adopted in 1986, mandate that the trial should begin at noon and last until the Senate decides to adjourn. Monday through Saturday, quote, until final judgment shall be rendered, end quote. Number two, what happens at the trial? An impeachment trial is not like a run-of-the-mill trial, but it does have some similarities. House managers will act as the prosecution, presenting the case for impeachment to the senators, whose role is a combination of judge and jury. House Speaker Nancy Pelosi announced the seven members of the House who will serve as the managers, including Intelligence Chairman Adam Schiff and Judiciary Chairman Jerry Nadler. A team of lawyers will put on the president's defense, including White House counsel Pat Cipollone, Trump's personal attorney Jay Sekulow, and former independent counsel Ken Starr, whose investigation into the Whitewater controversy led to Clinton's impeachment. Roberts will preside over the trial, consistent with Article 3, Section 6 of the Constitution, although it is mostly a ceremonial role. After presiding over Clinton's impeachment trial, then Chief Justice William Rehnquist said, I took a leaf out of Gilbert and Sullivan's comic opera, Lolanthe. Is that right? Lolanthe. I did nothing in particular and did it very well. When the trial begins, the Senate will adopt a resolution establishing the specific timetable, including the time allotted for each side to present its case, senators to ask questions, and the Senate to consider motions. At that point, if the Senate follows the general pattern of the Clinton trial, the Senate will vote on a motion to dismiss the impeachment, and if that motion fails, on whether additional witnesses or evidence should be considered. During Johnson's impeachment trial, the prosecution and defense called a total of 41 witnesses. During the Clinton trial, three witnesses provided videotaped testimony. McConnell and several other Senate Republicans have indicated they think the Senate should rely on transcripts of the testimony of witnesses who appeared before the House, while Minority Leader Chuck Schumer and several other Democrats have demanded that witnesses be called to testify. Number three. These are the eight things you need to know about this impeachment trial. Number three. Does the president have to appear before the Senate? No. While the Senate does issue a summons to the individual being tried, its impeachment trial rules allow for an appearance by the defendant or by his attorney. The Senate tried unsuccessfully to force Johnson to appear for his impeachment trial. The New York Times published an account of how Chief Justice Salmon Chase asked the Senate Sergeant-at-Arms to summon the president. Quote, in a loud voice and amid the stillness of the whole chamber, he called three times, Andrew Johnson! Andrew Johnson! Andrew Johnson! But instead, the president's legal team, including Attorney General Henry Stanberry, who resigned the day before, and former Supreme Court Justice Benjamin Curtis, arrived. And Clinton likewise didn't appear before the Senate during his trial. Trump previously indicated he would strongly consider testifying or providing a written statement to the House during its impeachment inquiry, but that didn't happen. Odds are Trump won't be present at the Senate trial. Number four. What are the rules the senators will follow? Senators are not required to employ a specific standard of proof. During the 1986 impeachment trial of U.S. District Judge Harry E. Claiborne, he made a motion to designate beyond a reasonable doubt the standard in criminal trials as the standard for his trial. After the presiding officer ruled that the question of standard of evidence is for each senator to decide individually, the Senate voted 75-17 against establishing a mandatory standard. Similarly, the rules of evidence used in criminal trials do not apply in an impeachment trial. The Senate's impeachment trial rules state that the Senate's presiding officer has the authority to rule on questions of evidence. Any senator, however, may ask that the full Senate vote on such matters. That reflects the Constitution's assignment to the Senate of the sole power to try all impeachments. Number 5. Can senators be disqualified for showing bias? Senators have taken an oath to do impartial justice according to the Constitution and laws in all things pertaining to the impeachment trial. Senator Dick Durbin, the Democrat of Illinois, the minority whip, argued that some senators have already failed to meet the independent and dignified standard of the Constitution envisioned. There have already been calls for the House managers to move to disqualify senators whose impartiality is in question. There is no basis in the Constitution, Senate rules, or history for such an attempt. The only qualification for participating in a Senate impeachment trial is to be a senator. Number 6 of the 8 things you need to know about the impeachment trial. What happens after the trial? While the trial itself will be open to the public, the Senate's deliberations after its conclusion will not be. The Senate will then come back into public session to vote on each article of impeachment. Senate impeachment trial rules say the Senate must vote on each article in its entirety, and the Constitution requires the vote of 2/3 of the senators present for conviction. Removal from office is automatic upon conviction, and the Senate may vote separately whether to disqualify the defendant from serving in any other federal office. The Constitution explicitly provides, however, that these consequences by the Senate do not, if the defendant's conduct is also criminal, prevent indictment, trial, judgment, and punishment according to the law. Number 7. If the vote fails in the Senate, can the president be retried? In theory, he likely could be retried in the future, although neither the Constitution nor Senate rules address this issue and no precedent exists for it. Few legal scholars, such as former Obama administration official Neil Katyal, have pointed out that the Fifth Amendment Double Jeopardy Clause does not apply to impeachment proceedings. A retrial on the same charges, however, would seem highly unlikely, and such a retrial would certainly run counter to the general principle of double jeopardy that someone cannot be tried twice for the same offense. What is more plausible and likely is that the House would introduce new articles of impeachment, which it could do. And as a side note, we already know that that is their plan. We already know from what has been said. And finally, number 8. Will the Senate conduct other business during the trial? And will it interfere with the Supreme Court's work? Senate committees may hold hearings in the morning of each trial day, but doing any business such as sending bills, nominations, or other matters to the full Senate would require the consent of all senators. The Senate impeachment rules provide that the chamber must suspend its legislative and executive business while the trial is underway. The trial should not affect the Supreme Court's oral arguments schedule. The court has arguments scheduled Tuesday and Wednesday, but those will conclude by 11 a.m., The court won't meet again for arguments until February 24th. Aside from taking up some of Robert's time in the afternoon, the trial is unlikely to otherwise affect the court. And those are the 8 things you need to know about the Senate impeachment trial. In the show notes today, you'll find the link to this. And in this, there are other links which will take you off onto sections of the Constitution and references in other articles and legal judgments and the like about this process. And I suggest that you get the show notes for today. They'll be available on Facebook and on dailyperspectivepodcast.com right after the end of this podcast today. If you're listening by podcast later in the day, they are there right now. Go grab them right now. And you can study up on this yourself. Now, we already know that the Democrats are making a fuss about the way things are playing out. We already know that the odds are there would not be a 2/3 majority in the Senate which would vote to convict for anything. And we already know that the articles presented are unconstitutional. So the odds of this going for very long are actually pretty short. Welcome back to the Daily Perspective. Diving through things here as far as they concern the impeachment trial. And I was skimming through social media in the breaks. I always do that. You know, I skim through Facebook and Twitter to see what's going on. And I ran across this piece from Fox News. It says, in an interview with The Hollywood Reporter about Hillary, that's the new Hulu documentary series on her life. Did you know that was going on, by the way? One more reason not to subscribe to Hulu. Hillary Clinton bashes 2020 Democratic contender Bernie Sanders in harsh terms, building on what had already been a news cycle filled with bad press for Sanders in advance of the Iowa caucuses. And I think that's just one more thing. It's just like, it's one more thing on top of the pile that is stacking up against Bernie Sanders. And it's becoming more and more obvious that the DNC, the Democrat Party, and the Democrat National Committee, what's that word? It's committee. They've all, just like in 2016, they have already stacked the deck in favor of their candidate of choice. And it's not Bernie Sanders. Interesting. Well, Representative Matt Gaetz was on the Tucker Carlson show last night. I don't know if you saw it or not. But that also had a little something to do with Bernie Sanders. He's hoping for a fast impeachment trial so he can resume his campaign in Iowa ahead of the upcoming caucuses. But according to Representative Gaetz of Florida, the establishment Democrats are hoping to drag this process out and occupy the senator in order to hand the nomination to his opponent, former VP Joe Biden. And I just happen to have the audio.
The U.S. Senate will hold the first hearings on President Trump's impeachment trial tomorrow. Even now, though, several important questions remain unresolved. How many witnesses will be called? Will the trial be brief or will it be long? And most importantly, where's Hunter Biden and will he testify? To help us figure out what we can expect from this sham and absurd trial, we're joined by Congressman Matt Gaetz of Florida, who is neither absurd nor a sham. Great to see you tonight, Congressman. What do we know about this, since you're right in the middle of it? What can we expect?
We learned from Mitch McConnell's resolution that he really intends to ripen a motion to dismiss as fast as possible. You know, the Senate potentially taking a vote on such a motion at the end of this week or beginning of next week is like lightning speed for the United States Senate. Let's remember, this is the same body that prides itself on institutional lethargy. I think they took hundreds of days to confirm the ambassador to Morocco. So the fact that in a matter of days or weeks, we could ripen a motion to dismiss, I think, is indicative of progress. You're going to see 12-hour days, we expect, that will go 6 days a week. And so the session will be in high octane for the United States Senate. And it's my hope that we'll push through that and have that motion to dismiss and get through this national nightmare as fast as possible.
Are we going to see Hunter Biden or any of the other Biden relatives who may or may not have gotten rich from their connections to the former president?
My concern is that if we have a witness exchange program, there is no way we're going to get the witnesses we really want, but the Democrats will get the witnesses they really want. That's really what's actually happening here. You have the establishment in the Republican and Democrat Party working against the populist wings of both. Well, you have establishment Republicans like Mitt Romney working against Donald Trump, and then I think you have establishment Democrats working against Bernie Sanders. They're trying to give Joe Biden the field in Iowa, keep Bernie locked up in the United States Senate during this impeachment trial, and so that's just how Washington works, trying to keep the populists at bay on every side of the political spectrum.
That is fascinating. You really think that Democrats in the Senate, I just want you to restate this to make sure I got it right, are trying to prevent Bernie Sanders from leaving Washington, trying to keep him here in the cage so he won't do well in Iowa?
Look, Bernie's got momentum in Iowa, and it's not ridiculous to say that the Democratic Party in its organized way would try to deprive Bernie Sanders the nomination. They literally just did this years ago when he was running against Hillary Clinton. And now I think that really this is an effort of the establishment of both parties to keep this charade of impeachment going on as long as possible, because it is empowering to the establishment to sort of have all this focus on the Senate rather than have Bernie campaigning in Iowa and the president running on a phenomenal economic record, a better trade posture with China, a better trade posture in North America, all the things that he promised to deliver on for the American people.
Huh. I wonder, do they see it, though? They're short-term gains, and you just explained what they are. But long-term, I mean, they're kind of allowing their own institution to rot, aren't they? I mean, if impeachment becomes a precedent that you invoke when someone annoys you, that doesn't empower any of our institutions, does it?
Well, it's very illuminating to look at what the articles actually say. When you talk about abuse of power, obstruction of Congress, these are purposefully amorphous terms.
That's
so that
right.
You can see the very same politics played out through the new tool of impeachment. Unfortunately, that is the new normal that the radical left has brought us to, but it's not about any constitutional crisis. It's about their thirst and bloodlust for power.
It always is. Ill temperament, bad table manners. Look for those charges in future administrations. Congressman, great to see you tonight. Thank you.
Thank you, Tucker.
It is just a matter of time before they point their bony fingers of righteous indignation and screech, ill temperament, bad table manners, this man's unqualified. And that's almost what it is like now when you really, really look at the situation. Because this abuse of power, every president in the history of this country, you can find something to say that they've done has been an abuse of power. Every single one of them. And, of course, the other charge is also ridiculous. And Representative Gates is absolutely right. He said, you have establishment Republicans like Mitt Romney working against Donald Trump. Then you have establishment Democrats working against Bernie Sanders. They're trying to give Joe Biden the field in Iowa and keep Bernie locked up in the United States Senate during this impeachment trial. That's just how Washington works, trying to keep the populists at bay on every side of the political spectrum. We're watching it play out right now. There are so many facets to what's going on here. There's so many things that are actually happening that sometimes you need a program to keep up with everything. It's just crazy town. Crazy town. And speaking of crazy town, Maxine Waters, I mentioned this earlier. You remember Maxine Waters? You know, she's the crazy lady who...
Impeach 45!
Yeah, that's her.
Impeach 45!
She's been going on about this...
Impeach 45!
Since he was elected. Anytime she's had a chance to appear in public and to speak to people, she talks about impeaching Donald Trump. We know that this is all about the outcome of the 2016 election. It's not about anything that Donald Trump has actually done. There's been nothing illegal. They've looked into, they've scrubbed and looked and looked and scrubbed and looked, and they've turned over everything, and they can't find anything to charge him with. And they can't find any witnesses who found anything to charge him with. They can't find anything. The desperation is so thick, you can taste it in the air. It's just ridiculous. But Maxine Waters and the rest are revealing the truth about this. They just want to damage this man as much as possible. They want to try to get him out of office. They want to try to reverse the will of the American people. Because as I've said before, these progressives who believe they are morally and intellectually superior to everyone who is not one of them, they believe you made a serious mistake by electing Donald Trump president. And it's up to them to correct your mistake. Because you're too stupid to make a decision like this. Keep in mind, these are the same people who want to raise the age to buy a gun. They want to raise the age to buy cigarettes. They want to raise the age to buy alcohol, but they want to lower the age. All of the reasons for doing that are because people are not mature enough at that young age to make those decisions, to do those things, to buy those things, to use those things. But these same people want to lower the voting age to 16. Think about that. These same people. These people, like Maxine Waters, who want to raise the age to purchase firearms, alcohol, tobacco, these same people, and their argument being that the people buying them have to be a certain age to be mature enough to understand what they're doing when they make that purchase, those same people argue that you're mature enough at 16 to cast a vote for president. I think it should be clear from just that one example that what these people want is more votes for their candidates. And they know that they can deceive people who aren't mature enough to make the proper decisions. Between you and me and the studio dog, the age to vote should actually be raised. It was lowered to 18, and I remember when that happened, and young people were excited about it. Yay, we get to vote. We get to vote to get the vote. And I remember my mom shaking her head and saying, this is a huge mistake. And I thought she was just mean. That's just mean. Don't you think they can vote? Don't you think they're wise enough, mature enough to vote? She said, no. And keep in mind that my mom was an educator for a long, long time. She taught at the college level. She saw people who had come out of high school and into her classes, her computer classes, in the junior college environment. She watched these people, and she uses an illustration from time to time when she talks about those days. And she says that it didn't matter. There was not a quarter that went by that she didn't put the instructions for how to hand your papers in on the board at the front of the room. Hi, I'm Mrs. So-and-so, and this is my class. The name of the class is this. If this is not the class you signed up for, you need to go find that class right now. This is how I want my papers turned in. Every time I ask you to turn something in, these things should be at the top of the page. And there would be the date, the name, you know, the name of the paper, and then over on the right side, your name. And she said it never failed. Every quarter, someone would turn a paper in with the words, your name, in the upper right-hand corner. And these are the people that the Democrats think are mature enough to cast a vote for president. God love them. If that's not transparent, I don't know what is. And Maxine Waters and the rest of her ilk will not stop. When the Senate puts an end to this charade, they'll stage another one. And we'll come back for another day tomorrow. That's it for today. God bless you. Have a great day. Join me back here tomorrow for the next edition of The Daily Perspective. Bye-bye.
Oh, we're done.